This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 340 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Welcome to episode 430 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Alistair H.
And now on to our read-along. We are finishing our An Echo in the Bone read-along, beginning with chapter 97, entitled Nexus.
So Rachel's out shopping, and she has Rollo with her. He's starting to make signs that he's interested in something or something else in their vicinity that's not her. Mm. And after a few minutes, he just takes off. He shoots off, choos, like, toodaloo, like, I'll see you when I see you, bro. She runs after him. She tries to keep up, but she, in the end, does not. It was clear to her he was following some scent, but but what? And then she's like, oh, duh. The only thing he would be following this intently would be Ian. And of course, she doesn't know that for sure, but that's the best guess she has. And she fills with excitement. The trail was leading them toward the edge of town. And she was having a hard time keeping up. She loses sight of him and realizes she ended up back near a pub. I don't know if it was the same place, the chapter or the opening scene opened up with them. She was shopping for bread, like she gives groceries, but they were not in a pub. There may have been mention of a pub. I don't remember it. But after this whole running around, she ends up in front of a pub. And once she's there, someone seizes her arm. And it was a tall, white-haired old man. Scene change. There's a lot of scene change. This is a lot of all over the place, at least this chapter. Scene change. We're with Ian. He is hungry as a bungry. He hasn't eaten in more than 24 hours.
What's a bungry?
And I don't know. You got to ask it. Ask one. He knew.
You said the word.
I don't. Yes, but I don't. You have to ask him.
So you're saying you made it up.
He knew that Rachel was there in Philadelphia. He'd found out from a German officer after asking about a surgeon named Hunter. So he'd been able to ask about the Hunters, and the Hunters were, because he knew wherever Denny went that Rachel would follow. So he asked where Hunter was, and the guy said, or he found out that he had gone to help a friend or do surgery on somebody in Philadelphia. Just as he's about to buy a meal, he's knocked flat by Rollo.
There he is.
Scene change, Fergus. Now we're with Fergus. Since he had been hiding from the Brits like these weeks, months, however long it was since he and his family had moved to Philadelphia, and he'd almost gotten in trouble for, you know, circulating pamphlets of a certain
propaganda.
Well, not even just propaganda,
like stuff that the
British government was not a fan of. Yes.
Yeah.
We don't know if or when he ever, while during this period, if or when he ever goes home, technically. But we do know, or we learn here, he's been staying in a barn and paying the owner or the owner's wife, whatever it was, it's a woman, paying this woman for food and board, basically. So he stays out in the barn, and then she also feeds him. And the woman he had, rented space from. That's hardly renting space. Like, he wasn't on an art studio. The woman he was paying tells him that there was someone out looking for him. And it was a Scotch man who was very tall. Now, very likely it's Jamie, but he doesn't have, he asked, like, was the guy's hair, like, by chance red? And she's like, I don't know. Like, I didn't ask that, and I wasn't told that. So he's like, it is time for me to go into the city.
Somebody needs to. There's a kerfuffle brewing.
Scene change, Rachel. Rachel's all, I don't think so, meaning the guy who grabbed her arm. Old Archbug confirms that confirms with her that she's friends with Ian Murray. And he's like, where is the dude? And she's all, he's in Scotland. And then he asks her, like, complete non sequitur, like, do you love him? And huh? And he forces her to go with
him. Clearly saw her with the dog at some point, which is a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
It's Ian's dog and he doesn't leave his dog anywhere. So that had to imply to him that there was something deeper between them than just friends.
Some trust at the minimum.
But that's still a jump in a conversation.
He puts his hand over her mouth because she's like, you know, screaming. She's making a little noise. He needs to shut up the female for a little bit. And he forces her to go with him. And then she hears someone yell, Rachel! And it's William. She yells for his help. And he and some other Brits, some soldiers, are running toward them. And Bug lets go of her so quickly that she trips and falls. As Bug is backing off, William continues to confront him. Bug had his axe in his hand, and he went after William. And William is hit. It's a glancing blow, we find out later, but he is hit with an axe in the head, and he's down for the count.
As you do.
Scene change, Claire. Back at Chestnut Street House, I believe. John's house on Chestnut Street. Claire is caring for William. You know, the axe.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
This is the first time the reader sees him call her. If I'm not mistaken, I know you and I talked about it. You and I joked about it. This is the first time we see in text that he's calling her Mother Claire.
Is it? I thought it was the chapter before because we talked about it in the last episode.
I mentioned it, but I don't think he's done it yet because they only got married.
He did it in the
They just got married.
Like, they did it like 2 chapters ago. At least
he didn't call her that until they got married.
He did call her Mother Claire. They got married in, hang on, let me move my, we literally just had this conversation during.
I said we had the conversation. I said
he
didn't call her yet.
I know, but we talked about him calling her Mother Claire and me saying it was creepy when Marsley did it. But
absolutely, you said that. But
right,
and we talked about it.
But we were talking about William calling her Mother Claire. That's the entire reason we talked about it.
Summer, listen to what I'm saying. We talked about her, William calling her that. But it was not in response to him calling her that in the chapter we read.
Oh, no, it totally was.
Okay, well, I disagree. If you find it, I'm happy to be wrong.
Girl, if I had my book in front of me, I'd find it, but I will send you the page number tomorrow.
I'm very happy to be wrong. I remember talking about it. I'm pretty sure that it didn't actually happen. But yet. But anyway, so I say it happens here for the first time in text. He asks her if she knows who the old man was. Yes, it was Archbug.
Yep.
Claire's all, yeah, we used to be pals in the NC.
She ain't wrong. They were pals.
I mean, kind of. He, like, as one point or for a long.
He was like
points,
the secondary. Well, after
he was
Roger.
Yeah.
It was like Jamie, Roger, and then Archbug. Was like the
and Arch, I think, for many years would have laid down his life for Jamie and maybe Claire, you know, maybe their family,
yeah,
who knows,
know,
because
Ian,
they
Ian
had a
kind
good
of ruined
relationship.
The whole thing.
So William wants to speak to someone about finding Bug, but William has a concussion.
Buck,
Claire,
Buck's nowhere near.
Reassures.
Oh, Bug. Sorry,
Rachel. That William will be okay, and Rachel tells Claire that Ian is in town. Rollo had run off and didn't come back. So,
it
like,
happens.
There's, like, not a lot of possibilities where he could be.
Yeah.
She takes Rachel downstairs to dish the hot goss on Bug and Ian. She tells him all about what happened. Like, this is what happened. This thing. There was a gun. Then there was an arrow. And his wife died. And it was Ian, totally. But it was totally accident. Rachel asks Claire to confirm that Ian, meaning right now, Ian would purposely want to kill Bug. And Claire says, yeah, if Bug means her, Rachel, harm, and he does, he absolutely would or will. And Rachel says, he must not.
He was prepared to do it that day, even before he had a good answer.
And she says, she will pray on it.
Mm. We'll see how that helps. And that was chapter 97.
Is that better?
Next up, we are going to talk about chapter 98, which Ginger's going to pronounce because I can't.
Miscianza.
Okay, that is the chapter of chapter, the name of chapter 98. Let's go.
May 18th, 1778, Walnut Grove, California.
That's so no, that's so close. Why are we in Walnut Grove, California?
Took you a second. PA.
I was like, that's not real.
Claire is attending a mischianza or melody. The word means melody. Sorry, melody. That's okay. Medley in Italian. It was a gala celebration to honor General Howe, who had resigned as commander in chief.
Right.
Lord John apologizes to Claire for all the pomp and circumstance. He's like, I thank you for coming. I apologize. This must be awkward for you. I know that, like, I know you're married to me because of this whole thing that, you know, you are. Your/our dude died. I'm here. You were almost arrested. So obviously we both know why you married me. I get it. And I'm happy to help protect you because it's the last thing I can do for our dude. But given our dude and your kids and where you came from, not like England part, but NC, the NC. I know that you all are slash were slash are. I almost said libertine. It's not libertines. For liberty.
I can't get past the fact that you called it the NC.
I did. This is the second time I've done that.
Like it was the OC.
I didn't even think about that. I didn't think about the OC. I was just thinking,
oh my God, you guys, we are in the NC right now. And like, there are people with guns.
So I'm not going to tell you until we get there, but that's actually another possible, episode title in the NC or the NC. Because the one I have is, the one I have, which I'll tell you when we get there, I think is a lot funnier and more shocking. But the NC was unexpected, so I like that. So the point is, he's telling her, like, thanks for coming. I know we're in this marriage of, I guess, slight convenience, protection, blah, 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 right? I know you don't love me. I know I don't love you.
It feels like it's more than convenience, don't you think?
I mean, if they
knocked boots. It's not convenient to not be dead. That feels more vital than convenient.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, it's nice to have someone so you don't die.
Like a marriage of necessity. Let's call it
my
that.
My whole point is, he's like, I know why we are on paper married. I know, like, I know this thing. And I know that you're, not because of your tie to Jamie, but I know because of, like, again, you're from, currently reside slash are from the NC. I know you and your kids. You guys fought on the side of liberty, blah, blah, blah.
And he also has been listening to her calling herself a time traveler and being like, cool.
But
yeah,
he's a believer.
Totally happened. No, he doesn't.
He's a believer.
But he is
so
totally just like agreeing.
It
no, but it does because he's pretending to believe her, which means he doesn't believe her, but he is pretending to, which
that
is a big thing in a relationship.
That has nothing to do with what I'm trying to say.
It's what I was trying to say.
They're at this mischianza, and it is gaudy beyond belief, given, well, first of all, period. Second of all, given that they're in a war. And number two, given that they're in the country where the war is and not like back home, right? Meaning in England. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, I know we're in this situationship. Is that better? But I got to apologize, like, for all the pomp and circumstance for our side, quote unquote, for the Brits. Given your loyalties, I understand this is not what you're about. And she's like, no worries.
Right.
And then she goes, like, oh no. And then it goes, to kind of where I think Summer is going. Cause I think you hopped in a little bit quickly or too soon, but we're there now. And she's like, no worries. I know what'll happen.
Well,
which is beautiful.
It's true.
She tried to tell you, Johnny boy.
I know. I'm specifically referring to a passage in the chapter wherein they state that Lord John knew what she thought she was and humored her for it. Like, he did not believe her, which is, I'm agreeing with you. But it is worth mentioning because it affects every conversation we hear between them moving forward.
No, it only affects the conversation. Oh, okay. It only affects any conversation, which there's not a lot of them. It only affects any conversation that has to do with her prognosticating or prophesying, quote unquote, about the future, which are not many.
It could compete. It could actually enter into any conversation between Lord John and Claire at this point from here until eternity.
If the status of who wins the war or who she and her family is brought up, absolutely. But we know where this book ends and we're going to get to 103 and it never comes up again. That's all I'm trying to say. So
I know where it ends, and I can't wait for you to get there. Because I enjoyed finishing this book and I'm ready to be.
Summer's like, can we go a little earlier tonight, please?
Where can we go? Go, go.
So she tells him, like I said, she's like, no worries. I know what's going to happen. And he's like, huh? She's like, or she tells him the British will lose the war in 3 years' time. Gray introduces her to a Colonel Andre. Sorry, not yet. That's a bit later on. That's not Gray who does that. Gray introduces her to a colonel. And she's introduced as or called Lady John. And I know that's not a story point. That's not important. It just tickles me that women, aristocratic women, are called Lady First and Mother Husband. Like, because we're so used to last name. What would you be if you were? Well, I won't use your previous relationship's first name.
I mean, if it was part of my current boyfriend status, it would be Lady Sean. But that would even be weird because Sean is name his mom called him and not his actual real name. So if it was legal, it might be a whole different name. But I'm not going to say that on here because that's none of anyone's business. But yeah, it would have been a whole different name.
So yeah, Claire leaves Sean. Okay. And this is also interesting. So Gray introduces her to a colonel and he's about to talk shop with this colonel. And after they had the pleasantries over with like, oh, this is my wife, Lady John, blah, blah, blah. And then Claire's Lady like, okay, John. Great. I'm going to go grab a, whatever. I'm going to go over and do that thingy over there. She leaves in the talk shop. Quote, I had not promised John that I would refrain from passing on useful info. He hadn't asked it.
Of course not.
But exactly. Delicacy and a certain sense of obligation required that I acquire such information through him or directly under his nose. Unquote.
How dare she only feel this way when she's married, quote unquote, married to Lord John?
That's too
she
funny.
She could have done this at any point in time for Jamie, goodness. But she never did.
That is, I don't know anything about that. That is hysterical. I mean, okay, I think there's a ton, maybe even everything, most things
I'm sure there's more,
to forgive her for in Outlander, right? Because she's new, it was an accident, she doesn't want to be there, she's homesick, she's scared, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but every book after that.
Almost every book after that, she could have done this before book 7.
Right, that's all I'm saying. It's like,
oh, it's funny.
It seems silly.
So as she's looking at, remember, all of this is like gaudiness, right? As she's looking at the feast that's been laid, she's reminded of the King of France's dinner with the stuffed nightingales, et cetera, where she, she was pregnant at the time. So that obviously didn't help things. And she got nauseous and all that. But she immediately loses her appetite and walks away. She is looking at the peacock that's stuffed and everything. And they had replaced its eyes with two actual diamonds. And that makes her remember or think of the fact that, now this is very interesting because I think I forgot this. I think I forgot this little line, little area, section of text from before. We also find out that Lord John had given her a pair of diamond earrings. You're like, okay, that's cool. You know, he gave her a wedding gift or whatever. Quote, when the time came for me to leave, .. She, not only has she now decided not to kill herself, right? Mm-hmm. And to stay alive and awake.
Is she going to be the new Mata Hari?
She's actually planning, not making firm plans. Well, we don't know. We never get that from her. All we get from Diana is that she has absolutely plans to leave. She doesn't know when or how or where, but she's planning on going back. And again, it's never a story point. It's never a talking point. From here, you know, her going back when Jamie is quote unquote dead, right? It's never really thoroughly discussed. It was just like, is she going to kill herself or is she going to stay? Because now Jamie's gone. Well, now that we have this little gem here, it kind of makes sense, not just because she obviously doesn't want to. She has nothing else. Sorry. She has her grandkids there. I'm not saying they're not worth anything. But again, when the time came for her to leave, maybe that means once the grandkids are grown. Who knows? We don't know. We're never going to find out. But whenever that point is, all she knows, she's not reading the book We Are. All she knows is that her and Jamie's baby and their family are in the 20th century. Now, she doesn't know they survived. She just they believe on a hope.
She can't leave then. When the grandchildren are grown, there's going to be great-grandchildren.
Why else would she go forward? It is forward. Why else would she go back? Other than it being, you know, maybe an easier time for health and all of that. But that struck me because I do not remember that line.
I mean, but think about how much money she also has saved up there that she'd willed to Brianna and inadvertently Roger as well, because she didn't know they were going to get married beforehand. But she left everything to Brianna, which means she would come back to everything with Brianna.
That's not spent. Yes. Remember, they bought Lollybrox, though. They spent a lot of money.
Yeah, but we don't know how cheap it was. It might have been super cheap, and then renovating it was the larger cost. But I feel like the nest egg that Claire had created for her was much larger than that.
Across the room, William calls out, "Mother Claire!" In a more like masculine sound, actually.
I would hope.
Quote, "I do wish you would..." Oh, sorry. Well, it is still a quote, but it's her, not him. She goes, quote, "I do wish you could think of something else to call me. I feel as I ought to be swishing around in a habit with a rosary at my waist."
But what is she going to be called then? She didn't have a problem when Marsley called her that. Why is she having a problem now? This feels weird.
John had also gifted her the dress she was wearing, and he'd gotten someone to do her hair. Once the person was done, it was a, quote, "towering confection of curls and powder with a tiny ship perched on it, full rigged," unquote. And once the guy left...
I'm seeing this wig in my brain, and it's tall, and it has a toy boat in it, and I'm saying no.
Once the guy left, she took it down, brushed her hair out, and pinned it back up.
Thanks, but no. I don't need a boat in my hair, man. That seems excessive.
A woman Claire is speaking to mentions a Major Andre, and Claire asks her to confirm. Is he here? Are you talking about this guy? Are you sure it's him? He's even there at the party. So the girl introduces Claire to Andre. And she does not stick around. She does the immediate or first introductions, and then she gets herself away from there ASAP. She goes back and forth between William and Willie. And then Willie finds her, and she steps outside for some air because she is a little bit like, ooh. Again, it's like seeing one of those historical figures that are a little bit, not a little bit, or a lot scary. Who knows? Major Andre was the man whom Benedict Arnold would eventually conspire with.
Moving right along to the next chapter of this, which is 99, entitled "A Butterfly in a Butcher's Yard."
Rollo and Ian were hanging, thinking about how best to go about finding Rachel. And he figures he'll start at the print shop.
I feel like, just ask Rollo. Really? You're done? That's it? You're right. It was one page. Okay.
Careful, girl. I thought you read.
I know. I'm sorry. I did. But I don't remember it being one page until I looked at the chapters. Okay. Ooh. Okay. Next up, we have chapter 100, entitled "Lady in Waiting."
Lady in red waiting.
Not the same thing.
Claire's been married a month, and she still wasn't used to it. She couldn't believe Jamie was dead. She has even envisioned his death. It's not funny. It is not funny envisioning someone's death, but she's like, he would have, unless his like head was, you know, knocked or he was injured somehow, like he would have gone down with the ship or gotten into the water with the ship anyway. And he would have, I just ate my mic. He would have not gone down easily. He would have been like, damn it, I'm going to swim to America. And he would have so hated drowning.
He wouldn't have made it. Like,
no, of course.
Sounds great and all, but he wouldn't have made it.
No, it doesn't sound great. What are you talking about? Sounds terrible.
That he thinks he could make it. He's like, I'm going to make it. It sounds like a positive experience, but we all know he's not. That's not how that works. Go ahead.
Hecka doodles. She's still waiting for Jamie.
Okay.
The rest of her life would be waiting. Mm-hmm. And she's in her room hanging. Lord John comes to her room and brings a candle. It's at night, but she's not asleep yet. And he asks if he can at least, you know, can I at least comfort you for a bit? And we're like, as a reader's going, huh? Like, no. He just wanted to like hold her, snuggle, kind of a snuggle, but not like, not an intimate snuggle, but just like, can I give you some comfort sitting next to you?
Can I put it in your butt? That's what I heard.
He holds her on the bed. She becomes aware of his breathing, and just, not that it's different or out of the ordinary for John, but it just strikes her how different it is from Jamie's. And then she remembers what had happened the last time they had, quote unquote, grieved together.
Snuggled. When they snuggled like that.
He asks if he can truly comfort her, quote.
Aww.
And reaching down, he moved a finger very slowly in such a place and with such exquisite delicacy that I gasped and jerked away, unquote.
You did or she did?
Summer, I just quoted.
I know you did.
She's like, I can't. He understands that she'd feel unfaithful. And she's like, well, wouldn't you? And he says, with a big sigh, or I think it's probably my sigh, quote, a standing cock is quite blind, my dear. Surely you know that, physician that you are, unquote. Indeed, quote, yes, I do know that. And somehow I had forgotten that Claire gives him a handy.
I mean, she wanted to be involved. She didn't have to. She could have been complacent and just laid there and let him.
That's the name of this episode, That Handy. And taking him gently but firmly in hand, I dealt with him in tender silence, avoiding any thought of whom he might see in his mind's eye, unquote. Colenso, best name ever, Baragwaneth, bursts into the pub, scene change, by the way, where Willie is drinking. He does not burst into the room with a handy. Saying
I should hope
that they'd found the old man with the axe, and Willie commands him to show him. Scene change, Rachel. She's at the print shop, helping out. She's minding the shop while Marsley and the babes are out a-shoe shopping. And then Bug arrives. He refuses to listen to her, and he says, no, we're just, he does force her, like, you know, he grabs her, pulls her up from behind the counter, and, like, holds on to her, and he says, they'll wait. We'll just, it's okay, we'll wait for him. Of course, we all know it's Ian. She tries to convince him that, look, if you follow through with this, the soldiers who are going to come are going to kill you. And he's like, I don't care. I'm going to see my wife again, yo. She hears footsteps and yells. It's not dumb. I get it when she does, but it just sounds so dumb when I read this and say this. Quote, Ian, don't come in, unquote. Of course he came in. It's dumb. It's not dumb.
What's the easiest way to get somebody to do the opposite of what you want?
Tell them not to do something.
Scream it at them. Scream it at them like you're being damaged. And then everyone's coming in.
She's like, okay, couldn't keep him out. Ian, don't kill him. And then Bug turns to her and says, don't worry. I'm putting words in his mouth, but something to the effect of, don't worry, my dear. Don't worry, lass. I'll make it fast. Ian, unarmed because of Rachel, shoves her aside. Yep. He tries to egg Bug on. He's like, you will kill me first. And Bug's like, you'll wait your turn. You're going to watch me do this because I had to watch you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rollo's like, hold on, sir. And Rollo jumps on top of Bug. Bug axes Rollo. Rachel screams, goes forward, and Ian shoves her back again. Ian and Bug are now in a pile of, or make up a pile of arms and legs, and blood is going everywhere. William arrives and shoots.
And that was chapter 100. Moving right along to chapter 101, entitled Redivivus, I think.
Redivivus.
Redivivus.
And it might even be Redivivus, depending on what British or American, but whatever. A Brit person, okay, or American person reading the Latin. It's different. Claire and John are getting ready for some tea when Colenso, best name ever, dude, brings in a note from Colonel Graves. Then there's another knock on the door. Dang, this is like collection? No, what do you call it? Like a place where, a meeting place? Not a meeting. Place where people like keep showing up. And Gray answers. There's another knock on the door. Gray answers. He's like, not now, please. A voice replies, quote, well, I would, but there's some urgency, Ken, in a Scottish accent. In comes Jamie, and he closes the door behind him. He sees Claire. She runs to him.
This can't end well.
And they kiss, of course, and feel each other up and down a little bit, whatever they can do in a few minutes or seconds. And she wants to keep making out, but, quote, there are a number of English soldiers in the neighborhood, and I think, dot, dot, dot. And just at that moment, they hear a sound of pounding below stairs. And John, who's at the window.
And her husband.
That's not brought up here.
No, it's not. But that is absolutely a factor in this moment.
No one's saying. I mean, for Jamie or for.
It should have been. If it was not Jamie mentioned in the chapter, John. It should have been. Both of them. Mostly John and Claire. Jamie doesn't know that they married each other.
But I'm saying the other two should have been concerned that Jamie's coming here and we have this thing that's going to be problematic
because her dead husband's no longer dead.
Correct.
There's sounds of pounding below stairs. John, who's at the window, tells Jamie, if you delay any longer, you might be dead again. Might really be dead again. And he takes him, he's like, let's go out this way. He takes him out the room, down the back stair, or he's like, you can use the door to the attic, which would get you to the roof. So Jamie, as he's about to leave, again, he promises Claire he'll be back when he can. So they disappear.
I'd be pissed if I was Claire at that point, Claire. Too. Yeah, you just showed up, told me you're not dead, and you're going to leave me here with the man who I've married thinking you were dead and only because of that?
No, he's not leaving her. John and Jamie go together.
Oh, I thought you said that Jamie left and said all.
No, he did. He leaves with John. You implied that he left her with John.
No, I didn't.
But he absolutely
wherever
tells her
he went. I was just speaking of the fact that they were leaving Claire.
Oh, in the midst. Yeah, she's shafted once again.
Always.
Okay. More loud noises from downstairs. Mrs. Fig is doing her best to delay what we believe to be soldiers, someone making a racket downstairs. Claire herself goes out to help Mrs. Fig and runs into Willie, literally smacks into him on the landing. He asks where his father is. And even though she doesn't say it, she's thinking, which one? No, that's me. Jamie
she's
and John.
Either way, I'm your mother, Claire. So let's move on from that point.
Well, either way, they're gone together. Jamie
too.
And John had made a noise as they'd escaped. As they're escaping, after she runs into Willie, there's a noise. And Willie looks up and he sees them. They are 10 feet away.
Mm.
And William finally knows it all. Quote, William's face had hardened and matured, losing all trace of childish softness. And from both ends of the short hall, deep blue Fraser cat eyes stared out of the bold, solid bones of the Mackenzies. And Willie was old enough to shave on a daily basis. He knew what he looked like, unquote.
But did he realize, though? I mean, he knew what he looked like, but is this the first time he actually notices it, even though he's been in his presence multiple times?
He has not been in his presence multiple times since he's an adult. He'd seen him when he was 12 or so on the ridge, and he was, as far as being really close where he could have run into him, he was across. They were both kneeling on either side of the body of General Simon Fraser before they went to Scotland. And Jamie had a hat on and purposely pulled it down to cover his face. They were he was very careful because this is what they were trying to avoid the whole time. He's looking at Claire and Jamie both. And he's like, who are you? Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm James Fraser. You kent me once as Alex Mackenzie at Hellwater. And then he asks who he is. Or who he is, William. And he replies, quote, you are a stinking papist and your baptismal name is James. It was the only name I had a right to give you. I'm sorry.
That was unquote. A fantastic answer to that question. I felt it deep.
At this papist remark, William pulls off the wooden rosary that Jamie had given him as a child and he throws it at Jamie. He turns to John and accuses him of knowing it all along. Like, you know it all along. You didn't tell me. Da 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 da.
He's not wrong.
Jamie tells Claire to keep William back. And she does. Then there were lots of people on the landing. Jamie had a pistol at Lord John's temple. And he's using John as a convenient hostage. Of course, a fake hostage. But they don't know that.
Yeah, the two of them know it, but the other people don't.
Well, they and Claire. William probably. William hopes. Claire knows. And the two of them know, yes. And using his hostage, he's able to go by them, get downstairs. And the soldiers want to follow. But William, thinking not only of, I mean, James, fine. If he's safe because of this, that's not my intent. William is mostly worried about his father, his papa, which is Lord John. And so William tells the soldiers, do not follow them, return to your commander, and tell them that Colonel Gray was taken hostage by the rebels. So he does not even name Jamie. So he actually is, not actually, he is, okay, actually going out of his way to protect Jamie. Now, that could be because, only because he wants his father to be protected, right? Because if people go after him and there's a shootout, even if Jamie doesn't do anything, his dad, his father may accidentally get shot. So it's even if it is only to protect his father, he does go out of his way to also protect Jamie by not mentioning a name. And he's like, once you guys know anything, immediately inform me of any news. Claire was afraid for both of them, but over everything, the one thought that just beat out everything was Jamie was alive. Jamie was alive.
I mean, there's nothing else more important to take away from that interaction, honestly.
So Jamie and Gray hide out in a shed. And Gray's like, what's going on? Why are you being pursued? What's going on? He holds out a small packet. And he says he'd been seen taking this packet from Fergus. Now, while Jamie hadn't been there yet, Fergus was hiding out for a very a very real purpose. They knew of him. And that's why he was hiding.
He'd already been hiding. Yeah.
So seeing him take something from Fergus, they obviously believed and knew he was in cahoots with him in some way. So he was a rebel, right? And being a rebel is not necessarily, they don't go around arresting and killing every single rebel. But if you're a rebel who is circulating treasonous propaganda materials, yes, you will be arrested and potentially killed. So why had he come? But it's like, why did you come to his house? Like the house? And he's like, oh, Claire, of course. Duh. He's looking around and they take a chance and walk out of the shed. And the plan is to take Gray out of the city and then let him go. And then he's thinking, Gray is thinking, what will Jamie do once he finds out that I forgot I wrote this. What will Jamie do once he finds out that he'd ridden his wife? Exactly. So
I have a really good idea because I've read the rest of the books.
It's not in books. Yes. The two of them, he like puts his gun in his pocket. He, you know, walks next to him. He might have I forget what the book said about like how they're walking together or what position they're in or whatever, but he's not obviously walking around downtown with a gun out, let alone held to his head. So them walking together, Gray was able to get them through the checkpoint because he was, of course, with the British military.
Oh, well, and he wasn't pretending to be held captive. Yeah.
Remembers William. He's like, oh my God, I've been focused on like us, like not me, like not getting shot. And then us getting out of here safely. Like, oh my gosh, William, number one. And number two,
you sure he wasn't focused on just like having alone time with Jamie Fraser after he thought he was dead?
I'm sure he was.
I think he'd also be excited about that.
But not his. I mean, I don't, maybe in the shed, but when they're out walking around, when they can be shot and adapted, taken into custody, I don't think he's excited at that point. But he remembers William, not just like, oh, that's right, William exists, but he's like, oh my God, William, the thing that we have worked for like 18 or 19 or 20 years now not to happen,
now it's
just
very,
happened.
Very clear. Yeah, nobody wanted it, but here we are.
So they ride out of town and they end up somewhere near a stream. Jamie thanks John for caring for Claire, and John looks ill.
Right?
He wanted to just get it over with.
Yeah.
And so he comes out with, I have had carnal knowledge of your wife, unquote. Quote, he had expected to die more or less instantaneously upon this utterance, but everything continued as usual. Birds continued chirping in the trees, and the rip and slobber of the horses champing grass was the only sound above that of the rushing water. He opened one eye to find Jamie Fraser standing there regarding him, head to one side. Oh, said Jamie curiously. Why? Unquote.
And that was chapter 101. Moving right along. The last two chapters, you guys. We're going to start with 102, entitled Bread in the Bone.
Claire, now with Willie, goes inside her room and shuts the door. Both she and Willie deserve time to recover in private. She leaves Willie out in the hall. She goes in a room by herself.
She's like, he knocks on the door. Business, buddy.
Quote, I'm not sure what to call you under the circumstances, unquote. And she says, I hope our relationship hasn't changed. And she suggests that he continue with Mother Claire.
Right. Can you just keep calling me Mother Claire?
And he's all, okay. He wants to talk to her more. Yes, she knew. She knew, meaning he was asking her, like, did you know he was my father? And she's like, yes, mm-hmm. I knew. How, but how could she, this is Claire now, internally, like, how can she tell him? And what, how far should she go? What stuff should she tell him or not tell him? She knew that Jamie would have taken all of the blame for William's birth with regard to his mother. He would rather take all the blame for everything rather than blacken his dead mother's memory at all. And Claire's like, no, that ain't gonna be. And he tells her, she tells him, mm-hmm. or I should say, William basically brass tacks says he only wants to know if it was rape. And Claire says, absolutely not. Did they love each other? And she says, quote,
absolutely not.
As much as they could, I think. They hadn't much time, only the one night, unquote.
And the hand job.
Also, Lord John knows. William does not want to know anymore. He takes off, punching walls and stair rails as he goes. And as Claire is looking over all the destruction from the landing above, quote, mm-hmm. a small dark figure walked slowly through the open doorway, putting back the hood of her cloak. Jenny Fraser Murray looked round at the devastation, then up at me, her face a pale oval glimmering with humor. Like father, like son, I see. God help us all. Unquote.
She's here. She's arrived.
And that was chapter 102. We are going to finish An Echo in the Bone. I'm almost sad we're saying this, but I'm not. Almost. I was real close to sad, but I'm not sad.
That's the biggest, fattest lie you've ever told in your life.
I said I was close to sad, but I was not.
No, even that's a lie. You're texting me saying, can we record early? Okay.
Just early because I wanted to get done before it went out of my head.
Oh, I get it. But you want to be done. We both do.
We are going to finish our An Echo in the Bone read-along with chapter 103, entitled The Hour of the Wolf.
The British troops are packing to go up north and reinforce New York, Ian tells Rachel. Ian and Rachel are together. Fergus is now safe that the Brits are gone. A British officer named R.I. Remember who that stands for? What that stands for?
Somebody with R.I. an R.I. name.
I mean, there's only one that we know of. And it's the guy who...
I'm guessing his name is Richard and his last name starts with an I. That's all I've got.
He has a hyphenated name or a double last name. Randall Isaacs.
Randall Isaacs. Okay, cool.
A British officer named R.I. told Fergus that they want to cut the colonies in half to split the North from the South. R.I. passes himself off as an American agent, spy, but who knows? Who knows who he's actually truly working for? Ian's arm, which had been axed, is still healing. And Rollo, who had been axed, has healed.
How about you? You were axed. Are you okay?
When was I axed?
I'm just saying everyone got axed.
Oh. Ian tells Rachel, quote, the world is turning upside down, and you are the only constant thing.
The world turned upside down.
The only thing I must have... Oh, okay. I don't know if this is actual in the text or not. This is a quote, but I almost like either forget a word or added a different punctuation or whatever. This is what I have. This is the only thing that binds me to the earth, unquote. So maybe he was about to say only thing that I love, which was really not true because he loves his mom, but you know what I mean. He says he would become a Quaker for her, but he'd never be one in his heart. And he couldn't ever truly be a Quaker.
Right.
Rachel thinks on this. And then she says that just as Rollo, a wolf, is a worthy being, so is he. Quote, thee is a wolf too, and I know it, but thee is my wolf, and best thee know that. Unquote. And, quote, what I say to thee now is that I do love thee, and if thee hunts at night, thee will come home. Unquote. Ian whispers, and I sleep at thy feet. He gathered her in with his one good arm, both of them blazing bright as day.
And that was
an echo in the bone. At this point, y'all, just stay tuned. We are about to start watching this season's episode. Actually, half of last season's episodes and then all of this season's episodes. We'll have episode discussions starting the week after they air. And then I assume when we're done with that, when the season is fully done, it will be time to move on to our next read-along. Ginger, what's next?
Not to our next read-along. It'll be time to move along to the next big book. If you're talking about waiting for season 7B, which is in 2024, that's Moby. If you're talking about what we're going to do between A and B, then we haven't decided exactly yet, but we've mentioned or discussed maybe a read-along of some bulges.
Okay.
There's a lot, so I don't know. You and I would have to choose.
Yeah, I'm like, where do you even start? Do you do them in order, or do you just pick one you want to listen to?
I would probably start. I mean, we could do a poll, but if I were going to choose, or we were going to choose, I would just say, look at the order they were written in and go in that.
Yeah.
That's what we do for everything else.
We could do that.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Alistair H. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you are interested in having deeper conversations about Outlander, please join us at our group at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you have a hankering for some Outlander Pod branded merch, please go to our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
If you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, the Outlander Pod Gazette, please do. You can find us at outlanderpod.com/newsletter. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We appreciate your support. I'm making up words left and right. We appreciate your listening and your support. And we look forward to our next episode, which will be discussing 701. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code Outlander20, Outlander20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlander Pod.